Hey everybody, welcome to the Shay Anything Podcast. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino. We're back being the house cats that we normally are after a live edition at the
QVC.
That was
fun. Hey Doug, what time is it when you have to go to the dentist?
Oh my gosh. First of all, we tried to start the podcast. Andy slammed his coffee cup after slurping loudly through the microphone. Now his phone's on loud. Can you just put it on silent?
No.
2:30 is the answer to your stupid dentist joke.
What time is it? What time is it when the elephant sits on the fence? Time to get a new fence.
So we had a really good time at the QBC.
We did.
Such a blast to meet all of you. Some of you said really nice things about the podcast, and we're so happy that you're listening. And it was just a really cool event to interact with a lot of the people that we normally get to interact with on Twitter.
Right.
Talk Mets. You were, while we were trying to start the podcast, you were signing an autographed bat.
Of Dom's, poor Dom Smith. The guy can't catch a break. Now my signature's on his bat.
Well, he doesn't, he doesn't care about the bat anymore.
The nice guy that was like, can you sign this? It had Dom's signature on it. I was like, you sure? You want my signature ruining this bat? And he did. So, you know, thanks for your interest.
By the way, I signed a couple autographs at the QBC, and I guess there might be this thought out there that, like, once you're on TV, you somehow know how to sign autographs or get used to it. A, my signature, I think, is different every time I use it. B, I'm not good at signing things yet. I just tried signing a baseball, and you get smudges all over it. It's difficult if you use the normal size Sharpie.
This has got to be the most humble brag topic of all time, and you're going on at length about it.
It's not a humble brag comment, Andy, because
I don't even know how to sign
everyone
autograph.
Listening, a lot of people listening were at the QVC, and they know true. That you were giving autographs, and for some reason somebody asked me.
Well,
maybe it is a humble brag, but I'm just saying I'm not yet well versed on the art of giving an autograph.
You'll get there, son. You're going places.
Yeah. Will I get there?
I think so.
I am in.
You're the next Willie Geist.
Look, I love Willie Geist. That's a compliment.
Let's talk Mets.
Yeah, I guess we could talk Mets.
Well, Ken Rosenthal today wrote a column, an opinion that we've expressed many times, including at the QBC. That the Mets should sign Bryce Harper. He threw Machado in there. Obviously, either player would improve the roster. And then later in the day, at an annual on-the-record beat writer luncheon that the Mets always have, Jeff Wilpon had some availability, and his quote was, I'm not sure how many teams have two $30 million players. We looked. None do except sort of the Nationals this year with Scherzer and Strasburg, but Strasburg's contract, he makes like $5 in 2030.
Yeah, the way they structure deals is
so
strange.
But his point is that they have Cespedes, and most teams don't have both of those two players at that price point. So now Harper and Machado are points of discussion again for discontented Mets fans, and probably will be until, I don't know what, something else good happens for them.
By the way, this is an interesting dynamic. You're doing what I normally do. Like, I normally set those things up, and then you're like, yeah, so.
I've spent a couple of years now observing a master.
Yeah.
And I feel comfortable.
A master at his craft who occasionally gets asked to sign autographs. The first response to the quote from Jeff Wilpon today on Twitter is, what about insurance? So what do you know about Jonas Cespedes? The fact that he may miss the entire year, does that mean that suddenly you don't have a $30 million player?
No, I think the insurance situation with Wright is a little bit easier for them to deal with at this point because he no longer plays. With Cespedes, you don't know when you're going to get him back. I obviously, there's not a lot of hope that he gives you much, if anything, this year, but he's on your payroll. He counts towards your payroll, and that's how the team has to look at it. With Wright, they're saving, off the top of my head, roughly $15 million. But not all. You know how it's some's deferred. There was a chunk that they paid to David Wright. So it's not just like, okay, great. You're hurt, so we'll pay you. It doesn't work that way.
Way to grind through that burp, by the way.
I bet the public knew.
Yeah,
was none
the
wiser.
I just want them to know his face was making all sorts of strange movements.
But no noises came out of my mouth.
You did. Cracked a little there for a second.
Other than brilliant analysis. To be clear, we're not brushing aside. Hope this is clear if you've ever listened to this podcast or watched BNNY. We're not brushing aside Mets fans' desire for them to sign Harper.
Not at all.
I would like to see the Mets sign Bryce Harper, in fact. But the fact is the insurance situation does, it's not a one-to-one thing. It's not that simple.
Right. And if it were, injuries would be greeted with excitement by a lot of GMs and front offices.
Sure, Jacoby Ellsbury's
stay away. Awesome. Jacoby Ellsbury's hurt. That's great. Let's just use that money. Like, if it were that easy, injuries would suddenly become a lot more prevalent than they already are. And it's just, you can't switch one out, and it doesn't work like that. But
Cespedes, again, he has to be out a certain amount of time for them to get a certain amount back. It's not as much as what they got back on Wright. And he's going to be rehabbing and trying to get back. So what do you do? Void Bryce Harper's contract the day Cespedes gets off the DL? It's just, you know, I'm being a little, like, snide on that. But they should sign. They should have both of those players, in my opinion.
Yeah, or at least be thinking seriously about signing both of them. And I guess, Andy, one of the points that we're discussing for our 6 o'clock show, and there's no reason for us not to talk about it on the podcast, the idea that if you're the Mets, whether you want to even look at it like they don't want to sign a high-priced free agent this offseason, but instead look at it like they don't think these two guys are right for them. And if you explore that second option, it's interesting because Anthony Rendon, you've got Noah Syndergaard and Jacob deGrom to worry about. You have Nolan Arenado to potentially sign next offseason. Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, the list goes on and on of players that you could have in the coming years. You might have a 1 or 2 year window. You might be able to compete for longer. But if it means not giving an extension to Jacob deGrom, if it means never paying Noah Syndergaard, that
it
might be...
It shouldn't mean those things.
It should not. But if it does, it makes sense to me, or at least a little bit more sense than it has when I think about it that way, because are Bryce Harper and Manny Machado the perfect player for the team?
No.
And in order for the Mets to move heaven and earth to sign a guy that will cost this much, you'd have to think that they think he was perfect for their team.
They don't have a lot of payroll commitments, hardly any payroll commitments coming down the pike after their current deals expire. If they could explore a backloaded deal or a deal that gets more expensive in the middle, like the Wright contract did, that could be something that you would think would be workable. Ken Rosenthal in his column estimated, 163.3 million is their current luxury tax payroll. So if you're adding a 30 million player, pushing yourself up into the 190s, that's certainly a place where not a lot of teams are, including the Yankees. I don't know where the Yankees are at right now, but they've been playing under that threshold for a number of the past couple of years.
Yep.
So it's not as if the payroll is 85 like it was during the early Alderson years, and you do have a lot of room, but a lot of things are coming off the books, and that's one thing that fans point to, is if you can find a way to make it work, then it'll be great in a couple of years. And Machado and Harper are young enough where you probably don't have to worry about a couple of years. Look, if these were the perfect players, more teams would be in on them. Obviously,
right.
There's only a few teams that are at that price point. But we've argued before, I think that Harper in particular is kind of perfect for the Mets, because I don't want to hear anything about how their outfield is full. He's Bryce Harper. You could have a conversation with Machado about there's not enough time to get a good return for Rosario. Well, you'd have to trade Rosario immediately, probably.
Yeah, that's...
And you don't have time.
That gets into the dominoes.
I would have traded Rosario in December.
Bryce Harper, to me, I totally agree with you. And I think Ken Rosenthal's column is totally fair.
Of course.
In every way. And Ken did the right thing by saying, and by the way, I'm not picking on just the Mets, because it's not just the Mets that don't want to spend on these two guys for some reason this offseason.
But
and
the Mets would be the one that could probably make the biggest splash
I agree with Bryce Harper. I mean, I think Bryce Harper is near perfect, but again, I'm not in that room. Maybe their opinions differ. Maybe they're not even close to exploring him as a possibility.
They're not.
Yeah, and from your reporting, it certainly sounds like they're not. And it comes with these, well, what would you do? You know, if you did sign Manny Machado. So imagine putting yourself in Brody Van Wagenen's shoes, and he says, well, if we sign Manny Machado, you know, we already have Jed Lowry and Todd Frazier and Ahmed Rosario. Okay.
That doesn't sound like a great quote, but the fact, like if he were to say that, but yes. The fact is, if you're going to sign Machado, you should have done it sooner so you had time to work up a good trade for Rosario. You right. Can't be a desperate seller on a talent like Ahmed Rosario. Of course I would trade Rosario to make room for Machado, but yeah. It's not the right timing anymore. With Harper, all you have to do is have a wonderful opening day outfield of, say, Harper, Nimmo, and Conforto, with Lagares and Broxton on the bench, and be very happy with that. And you have Bryce Harper in Met-colored pinstripes in billboards all over the city and making everyone feel all excited. I think that's why it's so cool. He's not a great... He's a great player. He's not the upper echelon generational talent that some people thought he would be when he came into the league, or that he was for the 1 year that he won the MVP. But he's perfect for the Mets because he's really, really good. It takes him away from a division rival, and he helps them make a splash. We're wasting our breath. It's not happening.
Yeah, I go back and forth on whether it's wasting our breath, because I read the Rosenthal column, and I'm thinking to myself, This is a team and a franchise that on occasion can be enticed into doing something by the court of public opinion. That's not a bad thing. I like that the Mets listen to their fans and listen to the public. So when I read it, I could be totally wrong, but there's something about a writer of Ken Rosenthal's magnitude saying something like that where I'm wondering, okay, who's hearing this? You know, is there anything that can be said publicly that would lead Brody or lead Mets ownership to say, you know what? Yeah, we don't believe these two players are perfect for us.
I mean, you really think a $300 million business deal would come from a column?
I don't know. I would be motivated to change the story.
Sure.
I love the idea of changing the entire storyline. You sign Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, half of Twitter goes away and back into the dark hole that they sometimes crawl out of.
You might be surprised. It's only a couple weeks.
Look, losing would bring those people back out. But if they sign Bryce Harper, and again, your reporting, which we rely on, is saying that they are not at all interested in that player.
I'm not saying that anything can ever change, but to this moment, it's been a no. They're out. They're not out. They were never in.
They were never in. But this market is so weird. I mean, it's just bananas.
He'll still get between $250 and $350 million minimum.
So what Rosenthal was potentially suggesting was 8 for $250, right?
He said, why don't you offer them both 8 for $250 and give them 48 hours to see the first one to take it. I mean, that's fun. That would be cool.
It is fun. I don't know.
It was a good column. It was the same thing with slightly different wording and detail that we spent half an hour talking about at the QBC. Obviously, it would be a cool thing. But, you know, Brody's extended quote at this availability, where this is all coming from, was about how they wanted to spread the resources around, fill different needs. You know, it's a shame, and it's interesting that it's Brody who negotiated the deal that he's stuck with now, because he was Cespedes' agent. But just what a shame that they signed you on a Cespedes. I mean, what a damn shame that player is on their team. They never should have done it. They should have traded him for him, enjoyed him in 2015, and let him walk. They brought him back on a team-favorable deal after 2015 because the Cespedes market didn't develop. Got away with it once, and then they brought him back again, which was a terrible idea. He is a player with a mixed record, at best popularity in his own clubhouse. He smokes. His legs can't stay healthy. His heels have been hurting since he was a teenager, which we apparently only found out last year. And he's the $30 million player in this conversation. Just what a damn shame that they signed you in a Cespedes.
I agree with you. I haven't heard you describe that signing like you are currently describing it.
What a waste of resources.
I would say that I'm a person who 5 days a week wears a microphone and talks about the Mets, mm-hmm. and I would have killed them for not signing Yonis Cespedes.
I wouldn't. I mean, I'm not, to be fair.
I didn't have the foresight.
Well,
I mean,
we were on the shows together. We were in those very comfortable chairs on 51st Street at our old set during Cespedes' two free agencies. The first free agency, I was wrong because I said they weren't going to sign him, and then his market got so bad that they did. And the second year, I said they
should. Boy, it'd be nice if that happened again, by the way,
with Harper. With Harper, yeah. Look. Mets, make me wrong. I wouldn't be wrong because I learned a lesson from that and I stopped predicting. I only try to say now what I know has happened to date, but that's a tangent. I will never say something won't happen. But during that time, I believe that I thought that they shouldn't and said that they shouldn't sign Cespedes. That whatever we said at the show at the time, the point is, you could see a million red flags with that player. I never understood why Alderson wanted him back. And they thought that Asdrubal Cabrera and Jose Reyes could help him with his quirks. I mean, come on. Those guys were short-termers.
Well, I mean, he showed you what, I don't know. I can think of a lot of Yankees that have had this. There's plenty of baseball players who have it and plenty of athletes all around sports that have it. That ability to carry a team.
He does.
And I don't think he's lost that. I just think he's lost the ability to stay healthy. And as soon as adversity hit, you started to see the clubhouse quirks become a bigger problem than they were when he was carrying the team in 2015.
Even then they were bad. People, like, I remember...
No, but they may have been bad, but the average fan at home was not
hearing about it. No, wasn't going to care. But, like, I'm saying even when... Usually when you're good, that takes care of it. His teammates were annoyed by him when he was awesome. So, you know, now imagine. He doesn't have teammates now. He's not part of the team. He's injured. He's away for a long time. That's not an insult. That's just true. David Wright didn't have teammates last year either, really. So there's no Cespedes clubhouse effect right now. But I'm just he's eating up that $30 million salary that he doesn't it's too bad that he's that guy.
There have been times in my life where I don't know whether it's apartments or something where I believed I couldn't afford this or I didn't think it was worth it or I didn't think it was worth spending my money on. And over time, my values changed. I watched what happened around me. I ended up pouncing. And I think the reason I'm going to keep asking you about Bryce Harper until he signs elsewhere is because I'm willing to believe that Brody and the Wilpons are allowing themselves to at least see what happens.
No.
And I get, you don't think so?
I do not.
With Bryce Harper?
I think that they are hard out.
Okay, so.
So something would have to change.
So, but
currently,
you're
not describing the current dynamic. The current dynamic is that player will not be a Met, will not.
Okay, so, but let me ask you one question, and I'm taking your answer, and mm-hmm. I believe it to be true, but everyone always points back to the $300 million offer he got at the beginning of the offseason from the Nationals, right? 10 years, $300 million. Are we supposed to believe that that is still the bar?
The floor for him?
Yes. Or do you think that went away? He went back to the Nationals. They said, hey, buddy, like you could have accepted it now. Now we're at 265.
No, I don't think so. It's unclear exactly where the Nats are on them. There's a lot of people in baseball that believe he'll be going back to the Nationals and somewhere around that number, if not a little bit more. But it's reported speculation at best at this point.
I'm fascinated by this, and we got asked a question at the QBC that was basically like, you guys have been honest in how you feel that the Mets should be in on Bryce Harper. How is that received when you work at SNY? And we each on the panel in Baseball Night in New York answered that question to the best of our abilities.
We said fine.
Yeah, we said
fine. We're allowed to
we
have
don't
opinions.
Get talked to. We're allowed to have opinions.
There's no issue
here.
With that.
Part of the I'm just genuinely confused because we talk about the Yankees too on BNNY and they don't seem to have any interest in Harper as well. And I know that he's an imperfect
Yankee
player.
Yankee fans are so mad about this.
And I know that he's imperfect.
I see
imperfect,
them on Twitter.
But it's just, do you realize what it would mean?
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's a million ways to look at your team on paper these days, but it's like, it would mean more than maybe you're giving Bryce Harper credit for. And I'm speaking to both front mm-hmm. offices there. So,
well, they want to, you know, it's front offices don't think about buzz. I mean, they think about it some, but I think in Ken's column, I think he said something like before GMs became actuaries. I think he had a nice line like that. It's true. It's like Harper's production, unquestionably, does not merit what he's going to get paid.
Right.
He's not as good. It's almost like everyone decided he was a generational talent. It didn't come true, but his price tag remains where at that reputation. But I actually, having said that, agree with you that there's an intangible there. And
yeah,
Machado's October was bad enough where the intangible went down a bit.
That's why when we were at the QBC, and again, I'm sorry if there are certain things that were in the podcast that you listened to that we did, and some things from Baseball Night in New York. It was two panels, and I'm forgetting which was which. But at one point I said, okay, take Harper and Machado, because didn't we get an audible fan answer that was like, sign Bryce Harper when we were asking if there's one thing the Mets could do. So I said, put that aside, Harper and Machado. Do you believe the Mets are better because of this offseason than they were at the end of last year? And everybody nodded and said yes. And what's a shame is that we can't really appreciate that fact. And I'm not saying that Mets fans should be at home thanking their lucky stars that, you know, Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz are on the team and that you're going to win 100 games suddenly. What I am saying is that the fact that these two guys are still out there and that nobody's willing to spend for them means that every team's fan base can get angry about them.
Sure, yeah. Eventually, it'll only be 29 fan bases that can get...
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe they just never sign.
If you hear as fans that superstars are not going to be getting paid as much as they want, you feel like, hey, our team should be in on that guy.
Yeah.
Why are we not capitalizing on it? So I actually think this is not a totally Mets-specific issue.
Well, I mean, Yankee fans right now are as mad with their team spending as I can't say that I've ever seen, because I've covered the Mets more than I've covered the Yankees, but I'm deep in on the Machado and Harper stories right now. Was able to report early in the offseason that they weren't so hot on either player. And people, Yankee fans are enraged looking at team revenue and why aren't we spending and da-da-da. So yeah, it is a fairly universal feeling in this offseason. And the subtext for it also is how players are getting increasingly mad about not getting paid is what they used to get paid. And so there's a lot about this topic, I guess, that's raising a lot of emotions league-wide.
Speaking of which, our producer Jeff put out a poll, and it's kind of rubbing salt in the wound of this conversation, but he's basically saying, if you're a Met fan, would you rather Harper and Machado both sign in Philly? Harper signs in Washington, Machado signs in Philly. Machado ends up in the Bronx, and Harper ends up in Philly. And the tweet results were mostly that last option involving the Yankees with Machado, along with not wanting to live in this world, go away, and a few others that we can't directly quote. In my opinion, it's one or three. Harper re-signing with the Nationals, I would then, I think, look at that roster and say, okay, the NL East is theirs if they want it. I know
that
they
said it 12
have,
months ago.
I know, and we said it last year.
That's a messed up organization.
They have a tendency to misuse talent and to waste opportunity, and I just look at their rotation and their lineup. They need bullpen help, but
obviously they blow everyone away on paper.
Right. Then the Braves are very strong too, and if the Phillies sign both, they're probably the favorites. So that's, I don't know. There's no good outcome. What's your opinion?
What's worse for Mets fans?
Or what would you think is best for Mets fans?
Both Machado in San Diego and Harper in Chicago.
Isn't Harper rumored in San Diego?
There's mystery teams on Manny. I'm not saying the Padres are one of them, but I'm not saying they're not.
I can't picture, even though San Diego just signed Eric Hosmer last offseason, I cannot picture Bryce Harper in a Padre uniform.
San Diego and the White Sox are my two most Mets positive outcomes, whoever the players
are. Can you imagine, seriously, end of the offseason, Manny Machado signs for less money than he wanted in the Chicago White Sox, and Bryce Harper signs for less than he wanted the San Diego Padres. Can you imagine all the hype and discussion would lead to that, them playing in front of 12,000 fans every night?
Well,
that would be such a travesty.
It's easier to follow a hot stove rumor than it is to watch a ball game. Ball games can be really boring.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, you know, May games. It's 34 degrees and windy in Chicago, and Machado's playing in front of nobody.
I don't think they go to those towns if they get less than they want.
You can go to Petco Park in the sixth inning and say, hey, can I get two seats in the hundreds? And there you go.
It's very pleasant to do that.
I mean,
if you get a fish taco and
everybody
a microbrew.
Should live there. I'm not killing San Diego. I think it's great. It's just the old adage goes, they have better things to do than just go watch nine innings of a baseball.
Those teams will have to overpay to get those players.
You think so?
Yeah. Yes.
You wouldn't have to overpay me to become a San Diego Padre, I don't think.
I would become a San Diego Padre for the league minimum. I'll do it for $600,000.
There's zero pressure, zero scrutiny. It's paradise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no downside to being a Padre.
AJ Pollock, by the way, not going to be a Met either.
And he's a Dodger.
Sorry to be a rain cloud. He's going to be a Dodger. Interesting contract. Did it end up being 4 or 5 years?
I couldn't say. I was prepping for this, and I know he's not in New York.
It clearly sounds like they went with length with him.
5 years at a lower AAV. There might be opt-outs and whatnot. I haven't totally brought myself up to speed.
Four years to earn $55 million, but could earn opt-out after year three if he reaches a set number of plate appearances.
Can earn a vesting opt-out. That might be a new one. So, it's very interesting how agents are getting really creative to try to work with this new reality. Just like you used to be able to just get an opt-out. Now he's got to vest an opt-out.
But don't you think this is
fascinating?
Might this be the new pillow contract? Because we're used to seeing 1 year high AAV kind of Josh Donaldson like. But what he's doing is an oft-injured player signing for length with an opt-out, but for not that much money. I think you could have argued give AJ Pollock 1 year $20 million, see how he does. The qualifying offer is what, 19.7?
It's not a pillow contract because it's up there. Yeah, I don't remember exactly. It's not a pillow contract because that's like, I think Boris's term with that was that you rest somewhere for a year to rest your.
Yeah, yeah.
He's under contract now until he's 34, I believe. So this is just a lot of guaranteed money.
But I know that it's technically not the definition of a pillow contract that Boris.
I know. Is this the new compromise?
Is this the new way that people are like, okay, you want security? Sure, but we're not going to pay you that much. We're not going to pay you the AAV that you probably deserve.
It's a way for the Dodgers to protect themselves against him being injured because he's only occupying 12 or 13 million of their payroll or whatever it is. So, yeah. To me, the most interesting New York takeaway on Pollock signing in the Dodgers is that. It takes away what it seemed like a pretty logical destination for Harper.
Yeah.
It's not so interesting to me from a Met angle because they hadn't been on him for more than a month.
That's what's funny. When the Dodgers made that trade, the Yasiel Puig trade with the Reds, we led on Baseball Night New York with should the Dodgers now be considered the favorite for Harper because it just seems so obvious.
They cleared a lot of payroll, but it was for another guy.
Yeah, and maybe JT Realmuto's next. We've heard his name with the Dodgers, and maybe Bryce Harper's like, I'd rather be in San Diego anyway.
Maybe.
He wants to be near Vegas. And last thing I want to get to, this was before, as Andy mentioned, today's luncheon with the Mets brass and the beat writers. Brody made a comment on Bruce Beck's show on NBC saying, I think with Juan Lagares and Keon Broxton and now Jeff McNeil moving to the outfield in a primary role, I think we've got five great outfielders that can give us a lot of length to our lineup. Again, the rhetoric with Jeff McNeil playing the outfield, Andy, was that something that when you reported they signed Jed Lowrie, were you told by the Mets that McNeil would play the outfield?
The day after I asked a Mets person if he would be playing the outfield on a hunch or whatever, and I was told yes.
Okay.
And now he said it publicly.
There is a lot that I'm nervous for in 2019 for the Mets, but one of them is these young players that I'd like to see develop that may not have the place to do it.
Well, I think there are worse problems to have. I'd rather have a team full of accomplished veterans anyway. Young players can go develop in AAA. Bye. No,
I'm with you to a certain extent, but if you had said last year at this time that Dom Smith was going to play some left field, we should have all seen that as a red flag because as if playing in front of 30,000 people instead of 8,000 people isn't enough of a jump, you want to teach him a new position while playing him once a week? That got in the way of his progression. And if he had played well last year, what do you know? You might have Peter Alonso expendable, or you might have Dom Smith to be a penciled-in first baseman every day.
Can I make a rogue prediction?
Sure.
Dom Smith will earn the first base job over Peter Alonso by midseason.
I don't think that's that rogue, because
I think he's developed more than people have seen and under the cloud of the Alonso expectation.
Again, I'm riding high on.
I said I didn't make predictions anymore.
On Jeff McNeil, and I mean, not that high. I'm not getting ahead of myself, but the guy did hit close to 330 last year, or 330. I can't remember. So
he's a solid player, and you are, I believe, it's fair to question whether or not they're going to screw him up by moving him around the diamond. We'll
see. Like, hey, play the outfield.
Well, what else
play
can
the
you
outfield
do?
Twice a week.
What else can you do with him? I mean, if this is because they signed Jed Lowry, and then, of course, also because they traded for Robinson Cano, obviously, it would be crazy if the presence of Jeff McNeil on your 40-man roster were to block either of those moves.
Yes.
He's a nice player, but come on, you're talking about Robinson Cano and Jed Lowry here. So, you know, you're dealing with the fact that you still have him, and someone gets hurt, he probably ends up in the infield, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a very January conversation.
It's true.
We have too many players.
Look,
what are we going to do?
Spring training is going to be interesting because there's going to be tryouts happening with players.
Jeff McNeil will be playing first base and cleanup on June 10th. I'm just kidding.
There you go. That B team that Brody's worked so hard on.
I'm just kidding. But what I'm saying is these positional log jams tend to work themselves out when people, like, pull different muscles in the spring training.
Quick Saturday night, then we got to go. What'd you do after the QBC?
I drove to a undisclosed location to hang out with undisclosed people and had a nice time.
That's the worst Saturday night you've ever done. And that includes...
You know what I did.
Do I know what you did Saturday night?
Yes, you did. I was talking about it all day because of the weather. I was worried it was going to be a problem. But then it didn't snow.
Oh, right. Yes.
What'd you do after the thing?
I actually hitched a ride with Sal Licata, which was nice.
Right,
it was really nice.
I remember when that was breaking up on the sidewalk.
He was nice enough to kind of offer, and I took him.
Yeah, you guys need a ride?
Yeah.
No, no. It was like, guys, I'm going to the city. It's cool, to be fair to Sal.
But yeah, he drove me home, and then I...
Was Todd in the car as well?
Todd Zeal was in the car as well. Can confirm. Then I
went... Was Timo there?
Timo Perez not in the car.
Okay.
I then got home, and we watched the assassination of Giovanni Versace.
Live and
not,
in person,
it's not Giovanni,
or
it's
the film
Gianni
about
Versace,
it.
Sorry,
you saw it happen.
It happened a long time ago, so no.
Oh, phew.
Yeah,
I was like, that would be traumatic.
Yeah, I would have to be.
By the way, that miniseries, terrible. Hated it.
Okay.
Did you like it?
Well, yeah, I did. You have poor taste.
No,
when it comes to
the OJ series is amazing. I had high expectations for the Versace one, and it was just bad.
It was good.
Boring.
Andy describes his reviews of TV and movies as final. No arguing.
They're not opinions, bad. They're facts.
Right, which is totally normal. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
That's what Ebert and Roper did.
Thanks for...
Then Ebert, God rest his soul.
Thanks for listening, everybody. As just Andy will continue to say random things until we go. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.